have to be what?
Twice.
What?
Twice as good.
Twice as good as them to get half of what they have.
Howdy to all our listeners, lovers, friends, and comrades in the struggle. It is us, Dallas DK Kyle and MJ Craig. We are back after another brief hiatus. And we think that you will very much like this show, this episode that we have for you. MJ, how are you doing?
Fucking tired. I'm very tired. I'm tired of America. I'm very tired. Very, very tired. I'm very tired.
Listen.
I was very weary last week.
So was I. After I let my iron levels get a little too low, it's important that you all eat your spinach and dark leafy
just like
greens.
Bye-bye.
Okay. So one of the reasons why I wanted to start this off, just because we are at episode 10. Yay! We made it. And one of the reasons why you guys did not hear from us last week was because we did record an episode for you all. I went back and listened to the edited copy. And I was like, I sound like an idiot. What the hell is going on here? Absolutely not. So it was just like, it was too late in the week for us to just re-record something. So I was like, hey, do you mind if we not publish this? And MJ was like, that's fine. So I've since listened to it again. I haven't decided if it will ever be released because there, in hindsight, it's actually quite funny. And we were very much unhinged, me more so than anyone else on the recording. I think we'll put it in the vault like Beyonce, and it will be a save for later. Maybe it'll be a special drop down the road. So, you know, little treat for you all for being good boys and girls. I need you to fix your fucking face.
My face partially looks like that because the idea of us re-recording or recording towards the end of last week, I'm like, that was just never going to happen because we're not the NPR politics podcast. I'm not going to record an episode and have to start it with, this episode was recorded at, because everything is fucking changing every 2 seconds. Like, I'm not doing it. So I was going to be like, sorry, but we're not re-recording. So we'll just have to tell them it was technical difficulties and keep it pushing.
No, we're going to keep it honest. It was me. I will say that I did watch, and we talked about this at our girls' dinner, was I watched the Jessie Wu podcast, and she had Lex P. And of course, for those of you who might not be familiar, Jessie Wu has her own single podcast, and Lexi P is one half of Poor Minds. And then she has her, it's the Lexi P show now. But they were talking about podcasts, and Lexi P was talking about how long they've been doing Poor Minds. I didn't realize it's almost been 10 years, and was talking about how much work actually goes into putting on a successful podcast, and was kind of detailing all the work that her and Drea do to make the show a success. And I was reinvigorated and was like, okay, though I think we do put on really good episodes, I'm really committed to making sure that the content here is good and that when we do record, we're putting our best foot forward and you guys are consistently getting episodes every single week. So, you know, even if I pass out, got to go to Luminous Healthcare and get my iron levels back up, we will record. So that is my new commitment to you all, the audience, and to MJ. We will record and post no matter what. So do you want to dive straight in? I know you are about to take to the pulpit and really give the people a lecture. So I'm going to let you do your big one. And I'm just going to get in where I feel I fit in as appropriate.
You know, when Hitler took over Germany, it only took like 50 something days from Germany to go from a decent, although like poor, somewhat democracy with a with a monarchy to the Third Reich. And it wasn't because everybody thought Hitler was right. It's because the people who didn't think he was right didn't fucking do anything. And then they ended up dead and removed from office. And then Hitler just took over. And that led to World War II and the incarceration, annihilation, and death and mutilation of millions of people. Do I think there are going to be concentration camps in America in the next 6 months? I don't know. Because honestly, Donald Trump is crazy. What I do know is that we have a Democratic Party right now who is very unclear both to the legislators and to us, the voters, what the fuck they are doing. I'm not gonna lie, I was a little surprised that they got all the House Democrats to vote no on that CR. Because 10 of y'all voted to censure one of your own fucking members last week for God knows what reason. So I was shocked that they could get all of y'all on the same page. What I don't understand, regardless of any of this, is that the Republicans came into office on January 3rd and then again on January 20th saying to y'all, we have a mandate. We have the majority. We don't need y'all. We are going to do what the people want. So why are you voting for any of this stuff? They don't need you to pass a CR. They don't need you in the Senate. So the fact that after telling the House Democrats that we're all on the same page, we're not voting for this CR, if that means the government shuts down, shut the fucking government down. Because what that means is you don't have enough Republicans on your side on this shit either. If the government shuts down, y'all aren't together on this. Because you don't need us to do this. We got rid of the supermajority. You don't need 60 votes for a CR. If you want to keep the government open, keep it open your damn selves. 10 of you reneged and voted for that shit bill. That wasn't even a real CR, because a CR is a continuing resolution. You're just funding the government as it already exists for another 30 days, 6 months, 1 year. You didn't even do that. They added a bunch of new shit in it. Some of y'all even open your mouths to say that you would vote for anything if it kept the government from shutting down, because that's the worst thing that could happen. No, the worst thing that could happen is the United States being in a constitutional crisis, which is basically what we're in when the attorneys general and the press secretary are told that the administration violated a federal judge's order, and their response is, who the fuck is that judge to tell us what to do? That's where we are. 45 days in. 50 days in. That's where America is. And our leadership in our party can't figure out whether we're supposed to resist or we're supposed to keep decorum. They're worried about looking the right way instead of what the fuck is actually happening. This isn't some Tea Party shit. Because I partially blame the voters for this. Stop electing these Democrats who only do 50% of the stuff they tell you they're going to do on the campaign trail. These Democrats have been voting for cabinet picks. All of these cabinet picks are garbage. I don't care if it's RFK or the EPA chair. All these cabinet picks are garbage. Some of y'all voted on Lake and Riley, which is nothing but a way to attack immigrants. You're voting on crypto shit because they're giving you money. You're voting on the CR. The reason why you're at a 29% approval rating is because people don't trust y'all anymore. Because you don't actually stand for the things you say you stand for. You say you're the party of labor. How many Democrats have a 90% or higher labor rating from the AFL-CIO? Not that many of y'all. Because when the rubber hits the road, most of y'all don't actually support labor. And that's why even though labor's leadership is with y'all, because they know you're better than the Republicans, the rank and file members don't actually care anymore. Because they live in your districts and they know that when it comes down to it, you're not voting for a minimum wage hike. You're not supporting workers' rights. You're not supporting pro-labor bills. They remember that from when you were a state legislator, when you were a city council member. And now that you're in Congress, you get to just hide amongst 430 however many members, and you still don't do it. Y'all don't all support the $15 minimum wage. You fought to keep a filibuster that you don't use. I just don't understand. Like, how do y'all think it's going to go over the next 18 months if we make it that far? Do you think next year people are just going to be so disgusted with Trump that there's just going to be this big blue wave and everyone's going to be excited? We're not going to get there if y'all don't figure out the fuck out. Because at this point, no one thought the CR wasn't going to go through last week. We just didn't think y'all were going to help. I'll pause there and allow you to add your piece.
I mean, I echo your sentiments. I think that at this point, the Democrats in America have made me realize why I have always been a fan of the parliamentary system of government. I just want to give a shout out to my very classical European education.
Because they would have cut somebody out if we were in the UK.
Listen.
There's no face to the front.
The Labour Party in the UK got into an argument. And one of their MPs takes the scepter that literally has to be in the House of Commons in order for them to meet, takes the scepter and begins walking to the door because literally the House of Commons cannot meet without the scepter. That's how heated that argument got. They were yelling back and forth. The argument got so heated that the Speaker of the House, the Speaker, did not see the MP taking the scepter out of the House, out of the Lord. And they had to stop that man at the door. Like, that is the kind of resistance that we're looking for. That is the kind of action.
Even the haka. In Australia, everyone was showing that video last year where she ripped the paper and they were chanting. The thing that they were chanting and singing against still happened. But they clearly were not in favor of it. And that is what people are looking for from the Democrats. Everyone knows these people have the majority. Make it hard is all we're fucking asking. Don't give them anything. Be, I don't know, the minority party. Be the resistant party. That used to be a pretty common way that things happened.
I think that our government really needs to... I think that the Democrats really need to look at... I'm happy to send Hakeem Jeffries some of my favorite clips. I'm a big fan of the government in Jamaica. They get down. Love when the girls and boys in South Africa, y'all don't know resistance like South Africa knows resistance. The ANC and the EF party all be giving them white people, they be dragging them through hell.
To be fair, I think that is also historically because at one point the white people in South Africa would throw these people on a fucking island when they didn't like what their political party said. Yes. So at this point, the ANC is like, since y'all can't do that anymore, I will talk to you whatever way and tone I feel.
And yes, there is some there's some nuance and some historical content as to why those two parties act the way they do. Yes. But I just want to, I just think that it is, it, and plus the ANC has been the majority party since Mandela was installed as president. So there is some, there's nuance there. But what I'm saying is, like, they are very much like, we're not taking our foot off your neck. Because the last time...
hands in Asia.
But I do want to say that there is a Instagram... There's a content creator. Her name is Cindy Noir. And I sent... like, I know I sent you the video. But she literally says the same thing. I'm going to have to say it. Representative Jasmine Crockett, you are not allowed to get on TikTok and dance no more. I'm going to just be very honest with you. I love you. Loved your...
this isn't a joke. This shit ain't funny.
Like, leave the jigging and jiving to the girls that we pay millions of dollars to do it. Kendrick Lamar's concert sold out. His tour sold out. Beyonce's tour,
92% of the way there.
We pay people millions of dollars to, like, sing, dance, jive, and do the whole thing. We don't need you on TikTok doing that. What I need you to do is, when Al Green got thrown out, I need all of y'all to get up and walk out.
Yep. And when they decided to vote to censure him, y'all should have been in there causing a fucking storm. And in the face of every single Democrat who wanted to walk up there and vote in agreement to that censure. And said very clearly to them, I know your district. I will make sure you get primaries. And I'll make sure that primary candidate gives you hell if you think you're going to walk up there and vote for that censure.
And to that point, leadership, resistance starts at the top with leadership. And we had this conversation. One of the things that we said was, and it's not too late, Chuck, Keen, I'm calling you by your first names because clearly you're not worthy of the office. There's a lot going on. Some work needs to be done. And so until you all get dressed right dressed, I'll be calling you by your first name. I would just say this. I can't speak for other people. You know, I am an operative. I'm a staffer. Happy to stay there because I don't want people having my... like, too many people have my cell phone number now, and I changed it. So... One of the biggest reasons why I've never run for office. But you decided to run for office. And I would just say that if Dallas was in leadership, the moment we got back into session on January 6th, when we started doing all our press conferences, when we got back, the first thing I would have said is that it would have been sent out via public memo, and I also would have sent it to the press because I want not only y'all to know, but I want the people to know where I stand. If vote for those nominations and bills if you dare, we will use the full strength of the caucus funds to primary you during your next election. I don't care if I gotta wait 6, 8, 2, 4 years. The next time you come up on the ballot, you will be primary. If I have to empty out the coffers to make sure that you're no longer in the House of Representatives or United States Senate, you won't be there. Because those of you voting for these nominations, y'all are voting for crazy crypto bills that don't make any sense. You're working on work study bills, on tariffs. Read a book. Why don't you have your legislative director do what they're supposed to do and write a white paper / briefing memo on what a tariff is and not bore the rest of the American public with your ignorance? Your ignorance is not a group project, as my old professor used to say. If you don't know something,
look it up,
and you haven't done the work, it's not up to the collective to get you caught up. That's your job. You need to do that work. And it's clear that many of you, those recently elected in these historic runs, weren't good executives and now are terrible legislators because you have no clue on with the job and tips?
I will just say that I am actually tired of the excuse of Trump won this district, or it's a front line, it's a red to blue, it's a difficult state. You won. The amount of senators who just won election and are voting like fucking bitches, because let's be real, that's basically what's happening. You're voting for members of this cabinet who are trash. You might not be voting for the ones that are publicly being trash on the news. You're not voting for RFK or Tulsi Gabbard or Cash Patel at the FBI, but you did vote for the Commerce Secretary, the Treasury Secretary, all these, the Secretary of Agriculture. You voted for all these other ones that are just as bad. Many of y'all voted for this guy at the EPA. That man has shut down EPA offices all over the country, including one of the biggest ones in North Carolina that is mostly Black people. The EPA was started by Nixon. Conservatism used to include conserving the environment. What are y'all doing? I think it's partially because some of y'all have been in office for too long, and y'all have lost the forest for the trees. Just because we're not on the brink of nuclear war in 1989 does not mean that the situation is not dire. And this is literally how places go from a democracy to fascism. Because as MLK said, you have a bunch of people who are more concerned about keeping a negative peace to be comfortable than fighting to create a positive peace where we can all prosper. You're more worried about decorum and the debate and how things are supposed to work. You're not realizing that this man is creating a constitutional crisis. The last time the US had a constitutional crisis, it led to the Civil War. But you know what people were doing before the Civil War? Getting busted upside the head with canes inside Congress, because that is how much they wanted each other to know that they were not on the same page. That's how this country used to be. Because we were taking it to other countries and talking about the UK, Singapore, South Africa, Jamaica. Let's stay here. Before the Civil War, people were getting busted upside their head, getting the brakes beat off them. No one's asking y'all to do any of that. We're asking you to vote no. We're asking y'all for the bare fucking minimum and to make these Republicans actually fucking work to tear apart democracy. That's it. No one's asking you to do anything else because we don't think y'all can do it. Y'all started singing "We Shall Overcome" when they're censoring one of your members. What the fuck are y'all doing? This ain't no kente cloth moment like what y'all did with George Floyd back in 2020. This isn't a joke. Like, it is wild to me to be watching what some of these legislators are doing. And I'm like, I don't understand why y'all think this is fun and games. Like, this shit's not funny.
I mean, I think it is really sad to see just the lack of attempts. Like, when I saw our minority leader, Chuck, in the White House, practically kissing.
Yo.
The president of the opposition party making deals behind the scenes. I was like, who's in charge? Like, sir. And then you get on the mic saying whatever. And it's time for you to retire. It's time for you, one, to step down from leadership. Everything that you've done last week, this week, it is clear to us that it is time for you to retire. Mitch McConnell, your counterpart, has stepped down. Mostly to operation failure. A lot going on over there.
Internal operation failure.
Like, see, I was going to make a like biblical joke, but I'm not going to do that to that man. I ain't going to play with God like that. But
one of our legislators is talking about read a book or a Bible.
Okay. And it just was like, I haven't seen a filibuster. Well, y'all try a little something. but
a 48-hour filibuster.
I can't stand that long with this crazy.
Strom Thurmond did one for like 50-something hours, fueled on hate and racism. It was like 20 of y'all to do a 48-hour filibuster. That's all you got?
Filibusters need to be planned. Democrats, you all need to have the proper attire to do these things. You need your shoes. You need your Bengay. You need your cane. You need to have people lined up. Read a book. You know, I think it's so sad. And it's surprising that, because I have my own gripes with him. Why is Bernie Sanders the most effective senator on pushing back up against the Republicans? Is on a full-blown Beyonce-level tour. Like, he got slogans. He got people showing up. Is on, like, Mama has costume changes.
Tim Walz has started what is the DNC D-Trip state party tour. He started in Iowa. And he also is packing out the place. I gotta find what he said about
Beyonce and Rihanna on tour fighting for democracy.
Basically, why? The special guest AOC.
But what kills me is just like, why is it? But even though Tim Walz is now on the trail, it took Democrats forever. By the time Tim Walz got on tour, Bernie has already been on tour for like a month and a half.
But you know what the problem is? You know what the reason why this is happening? To my big point of the day. The Democratic Party doesn't have a message. And the party hasn't really had a message since LBJ decided not to run for re-election in 1968. And I don't think this party has ever fucking recovered. I just rewatched LBJ's PBS documentary just to confirm my thoughts. Here's what I think. LBJ was probably one of the greatest political minds of the 20th century. If not for Vietnam, he would have been right up there with FDR.
Yeah.
The Great Society was one of the foundational programs that the Democratic Party still talks about today. It's the main thing we talk about when we talk about what we're going to do for people, are the pieces of the Great Society that were a building step upon what FDR did and what Truman tried to do, but LBJ is the one who ended up doing it. Because of how bad Vietnam was, he didn't think he could run for re-election. So he just decided not to do it.
Well, he lost the state.
He did, but
he started losing.
Right, but I'm saying, like, he decided, like, he wasn't going to win. So instead of running, he stepped back. The problem with that is that when someone, like any candidate who comes in, it is very difficult for them to now run on the platform because you couldn't even defend your platform. So now they have to separate themselves from you while also trying to push a platform and saying that this stuff is good. But it can't be that good if the person who did it couldn't even run on it. We had lost the South because of the civil rights movement.
Except for Texas. That was the last time we had 1968 presidential election was the last time we had Texas.
I mean, it's a movement. Because we've lost the presidency in 1968.
Yes.
Since then, we had Carter only one term. We had Clinton two terms. Obama. Two terms, Biden, one term. But if you look at each of those groups of presidencies, Jimmy Carter only made it one term. And that was in response to Watergate, if we're being honest. It was Nixon. He had stepped down. Ford came in. Then Carter got elected. Response to Watergate. Then Reagan came. Two terms. Then Clinton. Clinton served two terms. But Clinton moved away from a lot of the stuff. Like, the things that Clinton talked about on the road were not really the same kind of stuff that LBJ was talking about. NAFTA. Having to work for your welfare check. All the trade wars. All the shit that Clinton did. That wasn't shit that the Democratic Party would have been for back in 1966, 1968. But because the party had been so fractured, they were letting people come in. And if you were 50% of the way where we needed you to be, we were cool with it. The party that is supposed to be the party of labor from the Jimmy Hoffa era party of labor, when the mob, labor, and the party used to be like this, ain't no NAFTA going anywhere. Ain't no NAFTA happening. You're not sending union jobs overseas.
Crying.
But when you're so desperate to keep a party together, you let people come in with only 50% of the values of your party, that's where you get to. And that's how the party's been able to string itself together for over 50 years at this point. But now we're at a moment where a Fetterman, a cinema, a mansion, it doesn't work. It can't exist. We don't need those people anymore. Where you're only for the party's value 50% of the time. Because now it's not a fucking joke.
Yeah, I will say that I think one of the best things, and please understand what I'm about to say in context. One of the best things that ever happened to the Republican Party was the Tea Party kicks it off, but Trump is able to, after two failed attempts with McCain and Romney, Trump is able to latch on to the foundations of the Tea Party, the foundation that the Tea Party laid, and really create a culture for the Republican Party. Now, at first, a lot of y'all thought he was joking. First go around. But what was made clear after 2020 and the 2024 election, that the MAGA platform is more than just a set of policies in Project 2025, but it is a deep-seated culture that it's more than just red hats. Like, the Republicans, for good or for bad, are moving on one accord. They are clear about the messaging. Even though you hear that, yeah, there are Republicans who are like, okay, this is crazy, or they're not sure, they are you're hearing sources. Nobody would dare open their mouth
and say it out loud. The messaging reflects the base. The voters, the base, and the messaging, and the elected officials are in lockstep.
The Republicans in the Senate and in the House would rather cut off their own leg than to be caught out of step with the president and senior leadership. And
I started with Eric Cantor. When Eric Cantor lost his primary, Republicans realized that if they fuck around, their voters are going to make sure they find out. Because Republicans will primary the fuck out of each other and not care. Be out of lockstep with something Donald Trump says, and one of his crazy MAGA people will primary your ass.
He's not really,
Democrats just don't do it.
They're not really for real. Literally, you had, I mean, you can take it, another example is like, you can take it to Ukraine. Lindsey Graham goes into this meeting saying one thing.
He was taking selfies with the president of Ukraine before the meeting.
Comes out saying, we're disappointed. They're ungrateful. I've never seen somebody turn a corner so fast. Lindsey Graham turned the corner faster than the prostitutes he sleeps with. Lindsey Graham. Excuse me, sex workers. When I tell you, I ain't never seen nobody just
on the whole. That's not even what, my thing is, that's not even what Democrats are asking for. They're not asking for blind loyalty. They're not asking for people to act like they're fucking drones or robots that you can just flip a switch in the back and hit restart and they'll act like a whole brand new person. No one is asking for any of that. We're asking you to act like you don't support what these people are doing by doing the bare minimum of voting no. We're not asking you to sing anywhere. We're not asking you to chant. We don't need y'all to do all these weird press conferences. Vote no. And if that's too much for you, announce that you're not running for office and stop coming to votes.
I think that it is, when you talk about 1968, I think that once LBJ steps out, I, from my personal opinion, and there is some bias because he is one of my favorite political figures, I do think Bobby Kennedy.
I forgot some of the crazy shit LBJ was out here doing. That he man was a
I will say that I think Bobby Kennedy was your best chance just because outside, LBJ was able to coalesce power as a single person. And I think had Bobby, who was on track to win the nomination, he won the California primary, got shot at his victory speech, some say over his comments and support of Israel at the time, because there's always been an Israel-Palestine thing.
I will say, that does go to my point, though, of you had the Kennedys and LBJ, who were the heads, throughout the 60s, were the heads of your party.
Yes.
Two of them were assassinated. And the other person could no longer run for re-election.
Yeah. But what I'm saying, had Bobby...
You lose your messaging.
Yes.
Had Bobby been assassinated, you're probably right. He probably could have, maybe he would have beat Nixon because he was always very vocally against Vietnam. But I think once you lose those two people and LBJ has lost the people, your party doesn't have a message anymore. The people who led your party for 10 years, ain't nobody want them. And rest in peace to the two who got popped. I don't think the party ever figured their way back from that.
No, and it's so funny. I was going back in... Well, I'll say two things. One, yes, where we are today, I do agree with you after just kind of going back through some of the history and some of the facts. We are where we are today because of 1968. But as many legal scholars will tell you, the original sin is the three-fifths compromise. Because...
yes. I'm not laughing at slavery. I'm laughing at, like, yes, if we're going to go all the way back to the creation of America.
Because, listen, that, because if you look at the electoral map of 1968 and you see where the votes go, I do think that, yes, we had lost the South, but I do think that we could have carried, because you carried Texas one last time, and that could have just been be off the strength of LBJ. But I do think we could have got one or two of the Southern states. I think that's just Dallas. I could be wrong, but I do think that you could have squoze out a win. But I think because George Wallace carries 46 electoral college votes, the last time any independent has been culturally relevant in the presidential election, Jill Stein, it is like you sucking up votes. You sucked up 19 million votes.
Which the wild thing about it is when I was rewatching LBJ's PBS documentary, and they talk about him and George Wallace meeting to talk about the issues in Alabama. And George Wallace leaves the meeting and he's like, I had to leave that meeting. If I was in there another 30 minutes, I would have came out here a civil rights activist.
Yes.
That's the power of LBJ. That's what we're missing. But what I'm saying when I say, like, we lost it in 68, we never got it back, is I don't even think it's about the map. I think culturally, Democrats lost the message. Because you've lost the Kennedys. LBJ does not think he can run for re-election. And MLK is shot. So the civil rights part of your message has been rejected. The Great Society is the main thing that you have, but the Great Society's biggest champion literally doesn't want to face the public anymore.
No.
And the elite part of your Democratic Party, the Camelot, the elegance, the glamour, both of their biggest pillars have been assassinated. Teddy was still out here getting drunk. Like, there was no one to pick up the baton on the message front. I'm just saying, he was. That was back when Teddy was a wild boy. Rest in peace. That was back when he was a wild boy. But on the messaging front, there was no one to pick up the baton in a way that would actually convince the Democratic voters to believe this was still the right move. When you have Nixon on the other side saying, we're here because of this nonsense, because we have allowed the silent majority to be diminished. We have allowed the people who are the everyday Americans have been silenced and had civil rights shoved down their throats, have had poor people and their stuff shoved down their throats. And none of the people who championed that work are out here. Except, who did we have run? Was it Mondale or Humphrey? Humphrey?
Yeah.
But that's back when we didn't care about VPs, so they didn't want him saying anything. So people didn't really know about him until after this.
I think that is true. I think if someone asked me, like, if someone came up to me and asked me why I was a Democrat, I could tell them why. I could tell them why I am, like, why I choose to vote for Democrats. I can't tell them, like, oh, I identify with the party XYZ. Like, yeah. I could tell them that. I can say, like, well, I'm for reproductive rights. I have a pro-abortion stance. You know, I believe in the prosperity of the working class. I believe in union jobs. Like, I can tell them why I tend to vote for Democrats. I couldn't tell them, like, why I am a Democrat. And I think that goes to your point of just saying, like, okay, who the hell are we? Because when, yes, Tim Walz is out there, but I think if you ask the average American, Bernie Sanders definitely is a representative of the Democratic Party in the average voter's mind.
But if you ask the average voter, what has Bernie Sanders done? They don't know. Because he hasn't done anything. And that's the problem. Is that at the end of the day, there is a huge disconnect between the Bernie Sanders and AOCs of the world and actual changes in people's lives. You out here toting all this stuff. How many bills has Bernie Sanders passed since he's been in Congress? A couple post offices?
I'm not even trying to be shady.
I'm being for real.
I would have to go and look at his thing. I haven't.
We talk about old people need to get out of Congress. He needs to pass the baton to AOC and go home.
I think that the party needs a reset. I do think that hopefully he can do this. It'll be interesting because dynamics are so interesting, right? Because not everyone supported Kim Martin. So who is the person to unify? Like, that's my question. I think AOC does a good job. I don't think that she's going to be able to bring everybody along. Clearly, Chuck and Hakeem are not up to the job. They're just trying to keep their jobs, which is fine.
This ain't about the I anymore, okay? There's no I in team. And there might be an M-E in that motherfucker, but this ain't about you and this ain't about me. It's about we. It's about us.
But, so I'm really thinking of, dare I say it, there aren't any stars. Like, I know.
That's what happens when you have two generations that don't want anyone to usurp them, so they clear out the bench.
I know we have various governors who are eyeing, you know,
prime time.
1600 Black Lives Matter. Shout out to Black Lives Matter Plaza.
It's just funny because talking about shit that was in that bill that was supposed to be a continuing resolution. Why do we got to repaint? Why we got to rename streets?
And like, it is, but none of them, I mean, the actor Michael Douglas said Wes Moore at one point, I have some pushback on that.
Balance my budget first before you start looking at other places. Fix your house before you start trying to move.
Gavin Newsom. I just don't, none of them. It takes a certain level. I think when you think about LBJ had interned.
They don't make him like that no more.
Man. In the house. And literally created his own secret society for staffers. Like, you had to be invited.
They don't make
him. Created his own secret society for staffers. And then went back home. I think he was like a teacher for a while. He had a little life after he left DC and went back to Texas.
They don't make him like that no more.
Comes back, goes to the House, then goes to Senate, and then at each level is coalescing power and really honing his skills as a leader and really understanding the tactics and the strong man mentality that it takes to like corral people and get them to row in one direction.
LBJ called Hubert Humphrey when they were working on the civil rights bill and trying to get it passed, because he was like, this is the only time, like, this is the moment for us to do it. He called him, was like, I need you to pull back on some of the things in this bill. And Hubert Humphrey is telling him this, telling him that. He said, how many black people y'all got in Minnesota? Because we got a lot in Texas. So if we want to get this passed, this is what they need down in Texas so we can get this done. They don't do that anymore.
But not only that, so you have that kind of like strong, matured, meticulous leadership in LBJ.
George Wallace, like, conversation. He would have staff people who just follow legislators around so they know what's constantly up. They're calling people. These people would be talking about him on the floor like they are the shit that they got to pick up from their dog. And then he would call him up and be like, I would hate to be the person you were just talking about on TV.
I know you weren't talking about me. Like, but then on the other side of that, you have the Kennedys, to your point, who so you have this like sage wisdom, strong leadership in LBJ, but then the Kennedys come into power and you have this like youth and glamour and like this energy that like breathes new life into the, like comes in and breathes life into the party.
You have decorum in the Kennedys and you got that dog in LBJ. Like, LBJ got that dog in him. He wants to win.
He's very much a hood.
Excuse my language.
What? Yo. Yo.
I'm sorry. That's the only way to describe it.
I think he got that dog in him is just fine. LBJ had that dog in him. He wanted to win. If he had to stuff a ballot box, he's going to stuff a ballot box. If he got to call you at 9 o'clock at night and ask about your mistress when your wife pick up the phone, he going to call your house. He going to tell your kids that you need to vote on this bill. Like,
oh yeah, you're not outworking LBJ. Phone.
Like, he got that dog in him. He wants to win. He also knows right and wrong, but he wants that win. And I think with the Kennedys, you got the decorum. You got the pizzazz, that like elegance that people wanted, that respectability that they wanted in the White House, because you didn't get that from LBJ. They used to call him, what they call him, Landslide LBJ or whatever that name was, because he won that election by stuff in the box. And I think that's why, because LBJ struggled with foreign policy, and it's because a lot of foreign policy is that decorum, is that, you know, je ne sais quoi. And that's not him. He's trying to get a deal done. He wants to know, what do you want and can he make it happen? He's not very out here dragging Lady Bird around in some cute dress with the gloves to talk through the different China sets. That's not him.
But so that's what I'm saying. Like, team. Yeah, but I also think when the Kennedys really start to do their big one, they do bring, by the time the Kennedys really come on the scene and start running it up, LBJ is like definitely well into his, what? Is he in his 50s at that point?
I don't think, is he that old? Or is he, yes. Like, oh yeah, he has to be, because Kennedy,
he's a well in battled seasoned senator from Texas. And that's why I said, I think the Kennedys really breathe that kind of like youth. Like, whoosh, you're like, yes, they bring decorum, yes, they bring respectability, but they also, like, everybody's young. Like, the Kennedys were in power, and everybody was still actively having children. Like, actively, all of them were having kids.
That is real. That is, I mean,
shout out to Jackie, shout out to Bobby's 11 kids. We didn't know that that was there that many of y'all. That's a lot of kids.
Lord have mercy.
Effa was doing God's work. She was doing God's work.
I mean, they had 11 kids over like 14 years.
She had to be having like a kid a year.
Yeah. She probably had a couple Irish twins. Shout out to St. Patrick's Day. That should be great.
My gosh. Like, but so that's what I'm saying. Like, you have this like youth, this vibrance, this, the like, they have it all. And you do have, but we also forget. It's so funny because these people are our grandparents and our great grandparents. We also forget, like, MLK was young. MLK 39. Was, yes, MLK dies at the age of 39. Malcolm X dies at the age of 39, a few years before MLK. Like, mm-hmm. these people at the time are actively starting and having families. Like, and
we lost a generation.
I really do think that maybe Gen Z will come and save us. I don't know what the millennial boys and girls are doing. It's they seem to be a little depressed.
I don't think Gen Z is saving anybody. Because I think, well, because I'll say this. I've been listening to a lot of the All the Smoke podcasts, and I'll listen to the episodes with like the 80s and 90s ball players. And when they talk about how the NBA used to be, I loved it so much. I rewatched The Last Dance. That dog is gone. Like, these new generations don't have it. And that, I think, is what is missing. And I don't think Gen Z is going to bring it back because they don't have anyone to teach it to them. And they're also very sensitive to doing things the right way and how they talk to each other and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's just not the, like, part of the problem is that politics has lost that dog. Because we talk so much about Citizens United and money in politics and all this kind of stuff. And my art pushback is always, you don't think in the 1960s and the 1900s and back when they used to have robber barons and political barons, people weren't getting ducats? People were getting money. The difference is these people had that dog in them, so they would take your money, win the election, and then still vote how they want to vote, and then look you in the face and say, I'm going to run for re-election and I'm going to win. So at the end of the day, you do what I tell you to. Because I'm here now. And I'm not going anywhere.
And now, as I think,
in one of our first episodes, the quality of our elected officials has gone down. It just ain't the same.
I mean, but it's not just the elected officials. I think, you know, even labor is not what it used to be. Their labor is very passive. Like, labor is quick to complain but slow to move.
We lost
because, again, everybody who's in leadership in labor now was in leadership, were teenagers when Kennedy was running, if not in college.
We lost a generation.
Y'all,
we have a generation of people who didn't want, who don't want to give up power, to the point that that middle generation, those late boomers and those Gen Xers, are lost. They never really got to assume the leadership roles. And even the ones who are, they don't want to toss millennials nothing. Like, on the civil rights side, we lost Malcolm X, Fred Hampton, MLK. They were throwing the rest of them in jail. People started fleeing the country. So you had a good 15, 20 years where there wasn't another MLK. There was no, like, there wasn't a next one. And there was no one to teach the next generation what the next one even should look like. It was the same thing that happened in the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Nixon broke into the DNC. And the Democrats didn't even think anything of it. They were just like, some random break-in, crazy. The man still won re-election. And it took Deep Throat and a whistleblower to get found out. That's how broken the Democratic Party was. Your opposing candidate broke into your headquarters. And you were just like, that's crazy. I wonder who could have done it.
That is crazy. I think that, I don't even know. Like, it's so interesting because I think, you know, I see that Michigan got a new chair.
Oregon, Washington.
So there are a lot of new, there are a lot
Oregon
of
has chairs. A Gen Z chair.
And
you were just saying Gen Z can save us. Look at you now. You're like, oh shit, I didn't think they were gonna come save us so quick.
I think that you have one of the things that I am learning is that America has this affinity for youth that can sometimes be to our detriment. And I say that in saying Forbes 30 under 30, 40 under 40, youngest person to do this and youngest person
that 30 under 30 list is a curse.
Crying. But what I'm learning is sometimes the best soups have a nice slow simmer to them. And I think that's what you, when you see LBJ actualized in his 50s, his 60s, that is who LBJ is. He is a very fine coco vin, tomato soup, whatever your chicken noodle, whatever your favorite soup, he is. He has been slowly, like, well crafted. And
I think 50s. That he became president. He was 55 when the assassination happened. So he was out of the White House before his 60th birthday.
Okay. So you think about that and you're just like, oh, wow, this person. And I think that's why, to your point, even the Kennedys really have kind of had this like halt was they got the presidency, pop, one's gone. The other one, the younger brother tries to follow up, you're gone too. And the only ones that had longevity were the ones that were in, the one that was in the Senate. He had to get himself together. So, like,
I mean, he did try to run at one point and he just didn't make it.
Yeah, it just wasn't, that wasn't his vibe. But he's known, but when he gets to be who he is as senator, as in the Senate, it's because he was able to slowly fine tune and comb and really maturate and become this like central figure, this titan in the party, in the Senate. And he's able to, like, I think Teddy is the only one to even like come close. And he was still a ways off from being the next LBJ. Like, really, there is no other. But I think,
I would say he probably in values, because of his family, had the closest values to what the Democratic Party looked like at that time. Mm-hmm. You're talking, I was thinking about Joe Manchin. You remember in 2020 and 2021 when they were trying to do stimulus checks and Joe Manchin said, the people of West Virginia don't need $2,000.
Have you been
and
to West Virginia?
That was when I knew for a fact the party had fallen in a way that we might not be able to grow from. Because I don't know a world in which in 1964, a Democrat from Alabama would have got on TV and said publicly, my people in my poor ass state don't need money.
Which is crazy because I have been to West Virginia.
Before you finish that, a stapper would have tapped you on the shoulder and whispered in your ear, excuse me, President LBJ says he wants to talk to you. You would have seen a look of shock on their face. They would have gone into their office and somebody would have cussed them the fuck out. We're Democrats. What do you mean? What do you mean they don't need, they don't want their money back? Like, this person remained in the party another 4 years after saying their state, one of the poorest states in the union, the people of that state couldn't use $2,000. That's where the Democratic Party is. That person's a member of the party. But I thought the only reason that we allowed Joe Manchin to stay in the party is because the one thing he was good on was helping poor people. Isn't that why we kept all these Dixiecrats in the party in the first fucking place?
Should have got rid of him.
Same with Kyrsten Sinema. Another person who I'm like, why was this person a member of the Democratic Party? What values, once they got into office, did they astute? Kyrsten Sinema hasn't been seen since the last election. You didn't see her come out and say, we need to support VP Harris. We may have had our differences, but Donald Trump is dangerous. Nothing. She didn't do anything. All of a sudden, this weekend, she hops up online. Try to come at Jai Paul, AOC, a couple of the other folks like, oh, now you need the filibuster? Now the filibuster's cool? I was defending the filibuster last year. Everyone was getting on me. AOC was like, we should get rid of the filibuster. Because per usual, when we want to use it, when you need to use it, you don't use it. And it seems like the only time anyone does use it is to hurt us. So get rid of it, because y'all don't want to use it anyway. But Kyrsten Sinema is someone that my dollars as a donor to the Democratic Party went towards. Make it make sense.
It's hard to watch. I mean, I think that we need a reset. I don't know if Kim Martin is the one to do that. I have yet to see, even I know AOC's out there, but I have my own thoughts about that. But I've yet to see someone just stand up and just be like, yeah, no, that's who we are. I haven't come across that person. I don't know where you're hiding. I mean, I think the next presidential election is the best time for you to maybe show yourself, hey, or something. I just, I would encourage you, if you're thinking about running for office, 2026, 2028 is your time. Seats will be up. And quite frankly, a lot of these people need to be primaried. AOC won, primarying an incumbent, a well-funded
all
one at that.
All these people need to be primaried. There are too many career politicians.
It's time for somebody to retire.
Yes. And I will say this as someone who has worked for state parties most of my career. The reason that I do not like the term career politicians and why I think it is effective when voters hear it is because being an elected official should not be a career, because career implies that it is something that you have invested time, degrees, certifications into, and it is a long-term thing. Like, you are going to do this for the rest of your life. Which makes no sense, because as an elected official, you should have to reapply for your job every 2, 4, or 6 years. So how is this a career if it can end any day now? And because some of you all have become so comfortable in your elected official position, that's why it's a career. And that's why you vote the way you do, because you're not scared that tomorrow will be your last election. You're not scared that the next primary might be the last primary. So you take a check and you vote for anybody who gives it to you. And that's what the problem is. So y'all need to get primaried. I don't even care if you win the primary. I want you to work. I want you to be in that primary sweating your ass off because this is the hardest. You had to work since the first time you ran for office for the first seat you ran for. You have staff who don't even remember how to log in the van, and I've got to figure out how to cut doors. That's where I want most of y'all these next 4-6 years. Because that's how you're always supposed to be. You're always supposed to be working during your primary. You may not have to work during a general. That's gerrymandering. We can't fix that. But you should always worry during a primary. Every time you vote, you should be asking yourself, am I doing the right thing? Or am I doing this for the wrong reasons? And it's going to come haunt me once it's election time. Because someone's going to bring this up and they're going to be on my ass. And the problem is that too many of y'all don't have them problems. You did in 2018. Because that's what AOC won. And then all of a sudden everyone wanted to start running a real campaign. Because y'all got worried. And he gets shit together. And I think, I would say this. I don't think it's a question of whether or not Ken Martin is the right person or the wrong person to do that. I don't think that's his job.
Okay.
I think the DNC is a company at the end of the day.
Mm.
And in some essence, the company is running decently fine. Like, the company. The company.
Exists, the company has no money.
Which is what he's trying to fix. The issue is that the franchisees are having issues. That is messing up. The franchisees are messing up the corporate brand. So does the corporation need to get the franchisees in line? Absolutely. But because of how, like, disseminated leadership is in the party, Kemp's not an elected official. He can't tell these people to get it the fuck together. That's what your leadership's supposed to do. That's what the head of the DGA and the DLCC and the DG and the DTRIP and the DS is supposed to do. But the chair of the DS is out here voting for CRs.
Who's leading the DGA these days?
I don't even know who the DGA chair is.
Well, we're about to find out in like 2.5 seconds. Laura Kelly of Kansas. Hey, girl. Oh, yeah. Y'all let Gavin Newsom be the policy chair? Okay.
That's not surprising. I mean, but my point more so being, like, think about it for, like, the RNC, for example. Can you name the last, like, 5 RNC chairs?
Muriel Bowser's part of the DGA? Interesting.
Yeah, because of the mayors.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, most of us can't name the last RNC chairs. We can't name the last DNC chairs. I mean, in our case, we probably can't. But it's because
I was about to say not... it's the daughter-in-law. Ooh. Laura.
She's not the RNC person anymore.
Oh, she stepped down? She was.
They sent her ass to Greece.
Oh, damn.
Cause you know her, her and what, because that's the one who used to be married to Newsom.
No, that's the one married to Eric.
That what? You used to be married to Newsom?
No. The one married to Newsom is the one dating Don Jr.
No, they broke up.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, because they sent her ass to Greece.
Wow.
They sent her to Greece to be the what's it called? The ambassador, because they broke up because he was out here cheating.
Oh, that sounds right. Greece is nice, though. There are worse places for you to be. Kimberly Guilfoyle.
Guilfoyle. I don't know. Yeah. Kimmy G. We'll call her Kimmy G. Yeah. She's in Grease now. But I'm more so being like the chairs of these committees are supposed to be leading the business operation of these committees.
Mm-hmm. What is her face doing? I'm sorry.
The real problem is that the Democrats don't have, there's no one to lead on messaging, right? Like, whoever was the chair of the DNC in 07 and 08 didn't tell Obama, hope and change is what you're going to say on the campaign trail. No one had to tell Pelosi and them in 2018 that resist and blue wave was going to be the message. We ain't got nobody.
So good.
Yeah. We just, like, don't have anyone. Honestly, Democrats had more energy going into 2018, and if we're keeping it a buck, they had more energy for Joe Biden 6 months ago than they got for this president right now. And it don't make no fucking sense. They were going to the press behind people's backs. They were leaking shit left and right. Whispering stuff during press conferences. They would the same Democrats who last week were ducking and diving to get into their cars after voting on that CR. When they were trying to decide how to kick this man off a ticket, would be walking in the airport and some random journalist would be like, excuse me, can you? They'd be like, yeah, do you have a question? What happened to that energy that y'all had 6 months ago to kick a man off the top of the ticket? What happened to that energy? That's what I want to know. What happened to that energy?
I don't know. Well, I think that, you know, there is a lot to say, but I'll just summarize this episode by saying this. I was just reminded at the top of this episode that we've only been here for like 45 days. I feel like I have aged 6 lifetimes.
I'm gonna confirm the number right now.
I would just encourage Democrats that this is your time. This is your time. If you are like, Americans don't understand what the party is doing. Like, this is your time to prove your worth. Right now, many of the folks who voted for Donald Trump in 2024 are having buyer's remorse. It is now your job to show them why you're the next best thing on the market. You have not yet proven your worth to the base, let alone undecided, independent, and other Republican voters who are disillusioned with Trump's policies. So I just would encourage you all to, one, get caught up on what tariffs are so we can stop having that conversation. Too many of y'all don't know what that is. Elizabeth Warren is right down the street, right down the hall. Knock on her door and ask. But again, your ignorance is not a group project.
56 days.
We still have not hit 100 days.
We've hit 60. It has not been 3 months yet. It hasn't been 2 months. We still have 3 days before we get to 2 months since this man has been in office. Jesus fucking Christ, yeah.
I'm tired. I'm physically tired. So you all really need to sit down and really think about what it is that you're going to do for the next 2 to 4 years. Because as it's standing right now, I don't see anybody voting for Democrats. I see the same 19 million people sitting at home like they did. I see the
number going up.
This election. So you all need to get it together. Need to get, stop dancing. And find some unity and some courage. Plan out a filibuster.
Again, this is a joke.
And be serious. The, you know, people are being fired from their job. People who were originally working remote for the federal government and have bought homes are now having to sell their homes to move to DC. Traffic is crazy. Oh. But that's my own personal gripe.
We are on the verge. Not even on the verge. We are at the point of a constitutional crisis. The executive branch does not give a fuck what the legislative branch has allocated in terms of resources. Congress controls the purse. Donald Trump doesn't care. The courts have told him that's not how this works. He doesn't give a shit. Things go to the judicial branch. They get adjudicated. They tell the Trump admin they can't do something. His press secretary and his attorney general say, we don't give a fuck. You don't get to tell us what to do. That is a constitutional crisis. That's not the way the Constitution is supposed to work. And the executive branch has decided they don't give a shit how it works. They're doing what they want. This shit is not a joke. It's not funny. We are past the time of dancing. We are past the time of funny TikToks or Kikis. I don't want to see none of that shit. I want y'all to act as Huey from Boondock says, act like you got some goddamn sense. We are begging you.
Okay, well, this
also, the longest filibuster in history was 24 hours and 18 minutes by Strom Thurmond to filibuster the Civil Rights Act of 1957. If that man, fueled by racism and hatred in his heart, can stand and filibuster for 24 hours straight. Mind you, it also worked because there was no Civil Rights Act of 1957, if I remember correctly. I would hope that Democrats can string together a couple filibusters to save democracy. Otherwise, why the fuck did we keep the filibuster in the first place?
Sorry, I was trying to, I was looking up the Strom Thurmond thing and it just came in. It was giving.
Can't let Strom Thurmond beat us.
It was giving, I'm just a bill. Anyway, well, thank you all for joining us for this episode.
Oh, I have an On This Day in History.
Oh, you do?
I do.
I thought she was just going to get up here and do your big one and then peace out. Go ahead.
Because we're relevant.
Okay.
On March 17th, 1992, because we were talking about South Africa earlier, this is very relevant. One, fuck Elon Musk. But on today in history, apartheid came to an end in South Africa. On Thursday, which is when this episode comes out, March 20th, 1965, because we literally just talked about this during this episode, LBJ sends troops to Alabama to enforce the end of segregation. After which, he then invited George Wallace up to the White House, had a conversation with him, and as I'd mentioned earlier, George Wallace left the conversation early and said if he'd spent any more time with him, he would have came out that room a civil rights activist. So those are my two on this day in history. The Republican Party was also founded on March 20th, 1854.
Oh, well, shout out to them. For this episode's Women's History Month, like to give a big shout out to our forever first lady, Michelle Obama. I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing, but the Obamas have quietly told us that they don't want to be bothered. But Michelle...
Has it been quietly? I feel like they were like, listen, we gave y'all 8 years and you came back and elected Donald Trump. Good fucking luck. And Michelle... then y'all dragged us into this campaign. And then look what happened. You gave us Donald Trump again.
Michelle Obama, I believe, is the first double Ivy League educated first lady. Hillary Clinton did go to attend Yale, but she went to Wellesley College, which isn't considered to be an Ivy League. But just want to give a shout out to Michelle Obama. It was my week this week to do the Women's History Month moment. She was the first Black first lady of the United States of America. Princeton grad, Harvard law grad, and barred attorney, phenomenal woman, mother, and wife, and phenomenal friend. Michelle says when her girlfriends come over the house, they stay for like 2 days. They sit on that couch. They talk and gossip, and they don't move. There are no plans that are made. They move from coffee to wine from the morning to the evening. Michelle is a girl's girl, and so shout out to her.
Thanks for listening to the Twice as Good podcast. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you listen. Make sure that you like and subscribe and leave us a review. Follow us on Instagram at @twiceasgood_podcast, on X as @twiceasgood_pod, and check out our website, twiceasgoodpodcast.com, for more information. All opinions shared today, if this wasn't clear before, it should definitely be clear after today, are those of MJ Craig and Dallas Kyle. We are not affiliated with, and clearly we are not paid for by, any political party or political group to produce this content. See you next week.
Bye.